Today's Taisho will be on case 57 in the Piyen Lu, the Heikigan Roku. That case is entitled Joshu's I Alone Am Holy Throughout Heaven and Earth. Engro's introduction. When you have not penetrated it, it is like silver mountains and iron cliffs. When you have penetrated it, you find you yourself are the silver mountains and iron cliffs. If you ask how to do it, I would say that if you attain realization in the exercise of ki, you will occupy the pinnacle of attainment and allow not even the holy ones to spy on you. If you cannot do this, see and study the ancients' doings as follows. Main subject. A monk said to Joshu, "It is said, the great way is not difficult. It only abhors choice and attachment. Now, what are non-choice and non-attachment?" Joshu said, "I alone am holy throughout the heaven and earth." The monk said, "That's still choice and attachment." Joshu said, "You country bumpkin, where are choice and attachment?" The monk was speechless. Secho's verse, deep as the sea, high as the mountains. The fly's attempt to face the gale. The ant trying to attack a pillar. Choice and attachment, non-choice and attachment, a cloth-covered drum that reaches the eaves. Thank you very much for coming to practice Zen this morning. And I want to thank everybody for sitting very deeply. In the last sitting period, people were deeply immersed in their samadhi. And it was wonderful to see. Thank you so much for making that excellent effort. So some of you are familiar with Joshu. In fact, probably almost everybody here knows about Jiaodo Joshu. And Joshu was one of the greatest Zen masters of the Tang Dynasty. I think it's probably the case that there are more koans that feature Joshu than any other teacher. Even though the Momonkan and the Blue Rock Collection, the Linzai lineage, Linji only turns up once in a while. The most important figure is Joshu. So this koan features Joshu. And I mentioned that when Joshu was young, he went to a sesshin when he was like 17 years old. And he had a breakthrough. He had what we call in Zen a kensho experience, a glimpse of his enlightened awareness, you could say. And it was very powerful. And instead of deciding that he had experienced all there was to experience after this very deep enlightenment episode, he looked for a teacher, and he found a teacher whose name was Nan Sen, Nan Chuan. So Nan Sen became Joshu's teacher, and they studied together for something like 45 years. Until Nan Sen died. And everybody expected Joshu to take over Nan Chuan's temple. But actually, he didn't do that. Instead of taking over the temple, Joshu set off across China and visited other teachers in China, and had exchanges with them that are recorded in the Momonkan, some of which are recorded in the Momonkan. So this is one of those exchanges. And Joshu went to visit a temple, and everybody knew about Joshu and Nansen, and they knew that they were deeply awakened people. And when Joshu was making his rounds of China, he would go to temples and people would ask him questions. Sometimes they were aggressive questions, and sometimes they were genuinely motivated by the desire to wake up. So a monk said to Joshu, "It is said the great way is not difficult for those who have no preferences." That's how we recite it. Now, basically, what does it mean to have no preferences? Joshu said, "I alone am holy throughout heaven and earth." The monk said, "That's still having a preference." Joshu said, "You country bumpkin, where's the preference?" The monk was speechless. So that's the koan. So it seems a little bit odd for Joshu to say something like that, like, "I alone am holy throughout heaven and earth." Okay. So that's really the core of this koan. "I alone am holy throughout heaven and earth." That sounds like is something pretty egotistical to say, and very far from the spirit of Zen. So that's the conundrum at the heart of this poem. So I want to step away a little bit from this koan for a moment and just talk about one of the most wonderful sutras in all of the Mahayana sutras, and that is the Lotus Sutra. And as some of you know, we've been slogging through the Lankavatara Sutra in our sutra study group on Sunday night. And it's been a challenge because practically every sentence in the Lankavatara Sutra, practically every word is sort of resistant to understanding. And you have to work very hard to extract an understanding of just a couple pages. So we've been working on that for months and months. And now we're going to read the Platform Sutra of Wei Neng next. So please stay tuned for that. That's not tomorrow night, but a week from tomorrow. Right. So, the Lotus Sutra is another major Mahayana sutra. And if you ever have time to read it, I hope you can, and in particular, I hope you will read the version, the translation by Gene Reeves. Gene Reeves. It's a beautiful translation. And the sutra goes something like this. The sutra has all of these flourishes that are typical of Mahayana sutras. So the Buddha is going to teach, and he's... all the bodhisattvas and all these magical creatures come, and they're there to hear him deliver to talk. And when he delivers his talk, he says, "You know, I'm going to teach you something today that I have never taught anybody before, that I've never taught before." And he says, "What I'm going to tell everybody is that you're all going to wake up. All of you are going to wake up. It's absolutely guaranteed." So that's the sutra. And when the bodhisattvas and arhats and other people hear this sutra, they're deeply moved. They're like moved to tears. And Shariputra, who is the Buddha's right-hand man, you could say, who is the Buddha's most respected student, comes up to the Buddha and he says privately, he says, "You know, hearing this promise that we're all going to wake up, it's 100% guaranteed that we're going to wake up, is incredibly liberating for me. And he said, because, you know, I have known you since you started teaching Lord Buddha. And I have done everything you have asked me to do. So, you know, I became your student and I gave up the householder's life. So I didn't get married. I didn't have a family. I gave all of that up. I live as a monastic. I beg for my food. I sleep on the ground. And he said, and I have gotten up every morning for all my life and meditated at your side, working through my obstacles. And he says, but you know, I've had kind of a Daikensho. But I'm not the Buddha, you know, I'm not you. I don't have your insight. I don't have your wisdom. And it's made me feel terrible about myself. Because I've done everything you told me to do, and I've been practicing for, you know, 50 years. And I've even had Daikensho, but I'm not a Buddha. I'm not fully awake. And he said, I've been blaming myself. And I talked to the other arhats. I talked to the other enlightened beings. And they all say the same thing. They say, well, we have had Daikensho. We've seen the source of the mind. We have cleared away our karma, but we're not the Buddha. We don't have the Buddha's wisdom and the Buddha's insight. And we've all felt ashamed of ourselves. We've all felt ashamed. We felt like there was something we didn't do right in our practice, and it was our fault. That's the beginning of the Lotus Sutra. And I think it's an amazing sutra. You know, if you think about early Buddhism involved people like Shariputra, who gave up everything in order to follow the Buddha's path, in order to follow the Dharma. They made enormous sacrifices. And they had awakening experiences. So we learn in the Pali Sutras that that the Buddha first had an awakening experience, and then his followers had awakening experiences. So, in the Pali Sutras, it talks about the Buddha's awakening. And you probably know the story that the Buddha basically went off. He had been practicing with five other companions. And they had all been diligently practicing austerities, including not eating at all. And the Buddha was almost dead. And he left. And he met a village girl who gave him some milk and rice, and he drank it, and it restored his strength. And then sitting on his own, he meditated all day and all night. And in the morning, he saw the morning star and had his Daikensho. So that's the Buddha's enlightenment experience. And if you read the Pali Sutras, we learn that other followers of the Buddha had enlightenment experiences. So you could say the Buddha the Buddha had an enlightenment, okay? You could say Shariputra had an enlightenment, and so on and so on. And so, you know, we think of enlightenment as like a personal attainment, right? So you will actually meet people who will say, I have had Daikensho. I have had an enlightenment experience. And they may let you know that they're unique in that regard, right? They're unique. They've had a special experience. It's like getting your PhD, right? You're finally arrived, right? I've been studying. Now I get my PhD. I can hold it in my hand. you've had Daikensho. The Buddha had Daikensho. Shariputra had Daikensho. See. So all of these early Buddhists thought of enlightenment as something that happens to you or me as an individual. See if this makes any sense. Something happens to you or me that will that as an individual that makes you awake. See, that's the way most people think about enlightenment. So the Buddha, you know, practiced austerities for 5 years. He left. He went off on his own. He sat all night. He saw the morning star. He had enlightenment. He was enlightened. Shariputra followed the Buddha's path. He did this. He did that. He was enlightened. Madhgalayana, another disciple of the Buddha, did this, this, and this, and he was enlightened. So early Buddhists thought of enlightenment as something you achieve as an individual. It's individual liberation from samsara, from suffering. And you leave the realm of suffering and you enter nirvana, awakened consciousness, see? So this makes perfect sense, right? Except for one thing, there's a problem with that, right? So if you say, what is enlightenment? And the answer is, of course, enlightenment is enlightenment from the illusion of the self, right? Enlightenment is in awakening to the illusion of the self. So if enlightenment means awakening to the illusion of the self, how can it be a personal attainment? Is making some sense, right? How can it be a personal attainment? So, you know, I myself have known many people who have had Daikensho experiences. You know, my teachers both had Daikensho. My Dharma grandfather had Daikensho. You know, I've run into people all over the Buddhist world who have had Daikensho, and their experience of Daikensho matches pretty much what, you know, other has happened to other people, right? Okay. So there is this distinctive experience of Daikensho that's completely real, and please continue to pursue it. But, you know, what can happen is that we misunderstand what Daikensho really is, what Daikensho really is. You know, how can an individual have an enlightenment experience if enlightenment is awakening to the illusion of an individual? I hope that's making some sense. Good. Because if we think of enlightenment as an individual attainment, we have not understood what enlightenment is. And this is a widespread misunderstanding. How widespread? Well, in the Lotus Sutra, even Shariputra has this misunderstanding. So Shariputra says to the Buddha, you know, the Buddha says, I'm going to teach something I have never taught you before. You know, I'm going to tell you something right now that is I've never taught you before. Everybody is going to achieve enlightenment. And the Buddha even says, not just the people who get up at 7 o'clock on a Saturday and come to sit for 5 hours. Not just those people. Everybody is going to wake up. Everybody. And you could say to yourself, well, wait a minute, that's grossly unfair, right? First of all, I got up at 7 o'clock, I came into the Zendo and I've been sitting for 5 hours. You mean that guy who was asleep for 5 hours, he's going to be a Buddha too, see? The Buddha says, everybody is going to wake up. Everybody is going to wake up. See? Even the guy who didn't get up to sit. Even the person, even Trump is going, it sounds incredible, but even Trump is going to wake up. That's what the Buddha says. And Shariputra says, you know, Shariputra comes to the Buddha and he says, he doesn't talk about the fact that Trump is going to wake up. He talks about the fact that he's had Daikensho, but it's still incomplete. And because it's incomplete, because he knows it's incomplete, he feels like a loser. He actually says, I feel like a loser. I feel, you know, I've been practicing Buddhism all my life, Lord Buddha. I've followed you, you know, when you didn't eat, I didn't eat. When you didn't sleep, I didn't sleep. You know, I have nothing but this robe. You know, I sleep on the ground. I beg for my food. And I've had Daikensho and I feel like a loser because there's something I haven't understood. And all the arhats, all the early followers, all feel like losers. So the Buddha says, you've misunderstood what enlightenment is. See, it's not a personal attainment. It's not a personal attribute, see. So this is what I'm trying, this is the Buddha says, this is what I'm announcing now, right? That it's not just that everybody's going to be awakened and become a Buddha, but that basically Buddha consciousness is Buddha. Consciousness itself is Buddha. Consciousness itself is Buddha. So your fundamental nature, whether you got up to sit this morning or not, whether you are watching TV right now or not, is Buddha. See? And this is the teaching of the Lotus Sutra, that the Buddha says consciousness is like water, right? It's clear. It's transparent. It has no feet, no, you know, smell, no taste, but it exists absolutely everywhere, you know, and it nourishes everything. So, you know, if we think about enlightenment as a state or a personal achievement that we're struggling to achieve, that would be a misunderstanding of what enlightenment really is. Enlightenment is, you could say, consciousness itself. You know, your consciousness, your simple, pure awareness is enlightenment. That's the teaching of the Lotus Sutra. And so, you know, and that consciousness is helping you to wake up all the time because it's fundamentally Buddha. It's fundamentally awake. You know, the teaching of the sutra is if everybody is already Buddha and just doesn't know it, you know, and Buddha nature is constantly expressing itself, even when we don't notice, sooner or later, we are all going to notice. And it's like 100% guaranteed, right? 100% guaranteed. So the Lotus Sutra says, basically, you should not worry about anything. And in particular, you should not worry about waking up. It says that when you come to the cushion and sit down, the story you tell yourself is this: I am living in samsara, in unhappiness, and I want to be released from unhappiness. See, and I am going to be released from unhappiness by finding enlightenment. So that's a common understanding. what we are doing when we sit on the cushion is basically expressing our Buddha nature, our natural Buddha nature. So you know, something made you get up this morning and come here to hear the talk or to practice Zen. And what made you get up this morning to hear the talk or to practice Zen is already enlightened, is already the enlightened part of yourself. And so, you know, enlightenment is not something we are trying to achieve. It's something we already have. And in fact, you know, it's what brought you here. It's what brought you to the cushion. It's what made you get up, you know. So this is like a different relationship to everything, right? It's like everything is helping me to wake up. Everything is helping me to wake up. You know, I remember reading this book by this man named Jan Willem van de Veteren. I don't know if you've probably never heard of van de Veteren, but he was a Zen student, and he wrote a number of really interesting books on Zen. And he also wrote these really wonderful detective novels. If you're a fan of detective novels, fantastic. You should check them out. His name looks like Van, V-A-N-D-E-W-E-T-T-E-R-I-N-G. But his detective novels are loaded with references to Buddhism and to Zen. So you can see all of these hidden references. But he talks about training in Japan, and he talks about a man in the temple who was the temple manager. He was an American, and he had come to Japan, and he was in charge of, like, he did what Sandy does. He was the Karmadhana, right? He was in charge of, like, sesshin and temple organization. And van de Wettering tells us that he one day noticed that this guy had a gun in his drawer. And van de Wettering asked him, "What is that gun for? You're living in a Zen temple." And the guy said, "I brought that gun because I've given myself 7 years to wake up. And if I don't wake up after 7 years, I'm going to blow my brains out." See? So even though we might not be that extreme as that guy, we might be like making the same mistake, right? It's like, when am I going to have Dai Kensho? When am I going to have Dai Kensho? You know, when am I going to have Dai Kensho? So, you know, if you practice in that way, if you practice in that way, you know, your practice is expressing, if I may say so, a kind of deep self-loathing. Self-loathing. Yeah. You know, that man who had a gun in his drawer and said, 7 years or I'm out of here. That's pure 100% self-loathing. So for a person like that who is practicing because he feels like a loser or feels like a worthless person, all of his practice is an attempt to make himself worth it, worth loving, worth respecting, and so on and so on. See, so this is very human, right? This is very human, right? The you know, basically, I am so unlovable. I am such a loser. I am so lost. If I get up every morning at 6 o'clock and practice Zazen, you know, I will be transformed into a person worthy of respect and worthy of love, you know, and even esteemed. You know, people will esteem me. You are a living Buddha. How wonderful. Finally, you know, I'm a loser now, but if I do enough meditation, I'll be a living Buddha. See, how great will that be? People will finally like me. So this is the logic of that poor man who brought to the temple and said, in 7 years, I'm out of here if I don't wake up. And one way to think about meditation is that we're constantly improving ourselves or transcending ourselves, right? This is, we're changing ourselves into a better being, into somebody better, somebody wiser, somebody more likable, right? And if you practice in this spirit, it's not good for you, if I may say so. You know, that's not good for you, you know. That's acting from a place of desperation and self-hatred. So if you practice that way, please don't get mad at yourself, but realize, you know, there's another way to practice, right? You're not here to achieve Buddha nature. You're here to express Buddha nature. You're expressing what you already have, this wonderful, boundless, luminous compassion is already there. And, you know, I would say it's what made you get up and come to sit. You know, so when we sit, you know, we are like, we're like dolphins returning to the sea, right? You know, it's like when you sit down on the cushion, what you're settling into is your fun. It's like, I'm settling into my fundamental nature. You know, it's like meditation is pure pleasure if you understand this about it, right? That I'm not trying to achieve anything. I'm manifesting my Buddha nature, my naturally enlightened nature. So, you know, I'm not trying to be a Buddha. I am a Buddha. See, already. See, that's the idea. But you know, I'm not a Buddha in the way you might think, right? One way to understand what Joshu is getting at is this, if enlightenment is not a personal quality or attribute, and it can't be, because enlightenment is awakening to the illusion of a separate self, then it's not really accurate to say that anybody has an enlightenment experience. But what would be accurate to say is that enlightenment is happening all the time. Enlightenment is happening all the time, all the time. And enlightenment is a process. It's a process that we're all caught up in. So there's really no such thing as individual enlightenment. You could think of enlightenment as like a state of mind that everybody possesses all the time, even if they aren't aware of it. Or you could think of it as a process that's involving all of us, all the time. So when you sit down on the cushion, you're not just liberating yourself. You're part of this process. It's like the world is always waking up. The world is always in the process of waking up. And over here, you know, in this place, somebody suddenly, it's like the light turns on, right? And over here, the light turns on. And over here, the light turns on. You know, when you have Daikensho, the thing you realize is that there isn't a self here, that enlightenment is like happening all the time. And when you practice and you're manifesting, you're part of that process. You're part of like a process. It's like a movement, you know. So, you know, if you decide, we need to have better education. You know, you can become part of a better education movement. Well, you know, one way to think about human beings is that we're all involved in a movement, whether we know it or not. And the movement is enlightenment. And the universe is enlightenment. It is enlightening itself all the time, a little bit here and a little bit there and a little bit here and a little bit there. And, you know, when you come to sit on the cushion, you come to practice, you know, what you're doing is you are part of this process. You're part of this movement, if this makes any sense. It's like when you come to sit, you sit down on the cushion, you know, other people see you sitting. They see you on the screen and you're not moving and they begin to stop moving too, you know, and then another person sees you and stops moving. And another person sees you and stops moving. Right. And pretty soon, nobody's moving. Pretty soon, everybody's going into deep samadhi. You know, and pretty soon, it's like a little light is coming on in everybody, right? And, you know, you leave the zendo, the virtual zendo, and you go to your, you know, partner, or you go to the store. And, you know, somebody, people notice that, you know, something about you, you know, and they'll say, you know, you're such a nice person. And, you know, this is like changing everything little by little. It's part of a process. So this is how I think we should imagine enlightenment. You know, it's not a personal quality. It's something we are participating in. It's something you're participating in. The awakening of everybody, the awakening of everything. So you know, you're at a place in your life where it makes sense to get up on a Saturday and come to sit. And, you know, when you come to sit, other people come to sit. It's like shoots coming up from the earth, right? You know, it's like all of a sudden it's like spontaneously people are desiring to practice Zen, just like spontaneous. People suddenly realize, oh, this makes sense. And suddenly there's 25 people in the Zendo and they're all going into deep samadhi and this little light is coming on in their head. This is, you know, we say, oh, come on, how can that be? But this is, if this is correct and consciousness itself is enlightened, right? You know, sooner or later, everybody's going to be moving in something like this direction. Everybody's going to begin to want to more fully manifest what's already in her or what's already in him, you know. It's no accident, I think, that if you go all over the world, if you go to, say, Turkey, you know, you have people who call themselves Sufis, and they do motion. They sit down and they're motionless, but they also practice ritualized motions, and they enter into something like samadhi. Enter into something like samadhi, and they enjoy something like awakening. If you go to other cultures, you know, it's like, I think there's something in the human being that wants to be bigger than the self, that wants to be bigger than the self, fuller than the self, because it's already fuller than the self. It's like, I can't be fulfilled in this self. I need to get back to, you know, I need to get back to the bigger picture. I need to get back to what I really am. And I think you can go to almost any place in the world and find people who are engaged in something like what we're doing, because, you know, maybe the Lotus Sutra is correct, and maybe consciousness is fundamentally enlightened, and that people are trying to realize or express fully what's already in them. And, you know, we would say karmically, you know, the way we're doing it is called Buddhism. The way we're doing it is called Zen. You know, this is how we're returning to the source or expressing the source in ourselves. So you know, when Joshu goes to the temple and he meets this monk, you know, this monk sees enlightenment as a kind of personal attribute. So Joshu comes to the temple and he says, the monk says to him, so you're the great Joshu, everybody says is enlightened. Joshu says to the monk, a monk said to Joshu, it is said the great way is not difficult for those who have no preferences. This was one of Joshu's favorite lines in the Shinshinming. Now, what does it mean to have no choice and no attachment? And Joshu said, I alone am holy throughout heaven and earth. I alone am holy throughout heaven and earth. So, you know, if you said that to yourself every time you sat down on the cushion, it would be a statement of fact, right? You know, if you just said to yourself, okay, today I'm going to do Zazen, I alone am holy throughout heaven and earth. You know, I am Buddha. I am Buddha. I'm expressing my Buddha nature. That would be true. And, you know, Joshu is somebody who lives in that awareness. It's not my enlightenment or your enlightenment. It's consciousness itself. When we sit down on the cushion, what we're really doing is allowing the Buddha nature in us to come out, to express itself fully. And we're allowing ourselves to be more fully what we already are. We're already consciousness itself is already Buddha. So Joshu is trying to communicate that to the monk, and the monk is still trapped sort of in this idea of, he has trapped in, you could say, his own self-loathing, right? Or his own self-hatred. And he envies Joshu for being an enlightened person. And he's trying to like take Joshu down a peg by challenging him. And Joshu's pointing to the Buddha nature in the monk. He said, you know, you could say this too, he's saying. I alone am holy on heaven and earth. And that I is not Kurt or Keith or Bob or Lenore. That I is all of us together. It's this thing that's unfolding in our lives and in everybody's life all the time. There's a process of awakening that we're all part of. And the Lotus Sutra says, you know, basically this is going to happen to you sooner or later naturally. You know, some people, the Lotus Sutra says, like the Buddha's Dharma is like rain falling on the ground and it nourishes everything. It's like it nourishes everything. And it says there are some trees that are going to grow into, you know, mighty redwoods. And there are some trees that are going to grow into little Japanese maples. They're all going to take from their Buddha nature what they need to manifest in their lives. But their Buddha nature is a constant. So, you know, I think this is a really wonderful way to practice. You know, please beware of, like you could say, deficit models of practice. You know, where I'm practicing because I'm not worthy of respect. I feel like a loser. So I'm practicing to be a loser. I'm practicing to be admirable. I'm practicing to be something other than this person who gets mad, who loses control, who has fear, and so on and so on. And to practice in that way, Joshi's trying to say, is a big mistake, because it's actually making the problem worse. Right? It's making it worse. You're like the guy who has a gun in his drawer, and after 7 years, if I don't have enlightenment, I'm out of here. That's not just very self-centered. You know, it's the problem, the looking at practice in the wrong way. You know, what we're doing when we sit down on the cushion is letting out, expressing, giving some air to what we really are. So we're not, you could say, we're not trying to become anything. If we were trying to become something on the cushion, see, this would be a trap, this would be a prison. We're not trying to become anything. We're manifesting what we already are. So I would say, you know, just speaking for myself, just personally, you know, I have seen people who, you know, basically have nothing going for them in their life. You know, people who are, you know, not well educated, don't have any, have never caught a break. You know, I've seen people like that manifest just extraordinary compassion and kindness, you know, and you have to say, where is that coming from? You know, if you trust that you really are, Buddha nature is not a concept. It's who you really are. If you trust your Buddha nature, you can't go wrong. You know, people get upset, they get fearful because they don't understand who and what they really are. And Joshu's trying to let the monk see, you know, who he really is. He's saying, don't practice with a deficit model of practice. Don't practice with the deficit model. I'm unworthy, but I'm trying to become worthy. I'm enlightened, and I'm trying to become enlightened. Practice with the it's like the you're already Buddha, expressing your Buddha nature more fully. When you have not penetrated it, it is like silver mountains and iron cliffs. In other words, impenetrable barriers. But when you have penetrated it, you find you yourself are the silver mountains and iron cliffs. Everything is helping me wake up. Everything is helping me wake up. If you ask how to do it, I would say that if you attain realization through the exercise of qi, you will occupy the pinnacle of attainment and will allow not even the holy ones to spy on you. If you do not do this, see and study the ancients' doings as follows. Main subject. A monk said to Joshu, you like to say, Joshu, the great way is not difficult for those who have no preferences. You're always quoting the Xinxin Ming. Now, what does it mean to have no preferences? Joshu says, I alone am holy throughout heaven and earth. That is who I really am. I alone am holy throughout heaven and earth. The monk said, that's still having preferences. And Joshu said, you country bumpkin, where is the preference? I trust my true nature. I trust my true nature. The monk was speechless. Deep as the sea, high as the mountains, the flies attempt to face the gale, the ant trying to attack the pillar. That's the deficit model, right? Right. That's the deficit model of practice. The fly trying to make some headway in a gale, or the ant trying to attack them to move a pillar. That's wrong-headed practice. Choice and attachment, non-choice and attachment, a cloth-covered drum that reaches the eaves. So, you know, there's only really one reason to be doing Zazen. And that's because you feel better when you do Zazen. And if you don't feel better when you do Zazen, don't do Zazen, please. But if you feel better when you do Zazen, you're not feeling better because you're making progress. You're feeling better because you're manifesting who and what you really are. That's the secret of Zen. You know, I've been doing this for more than 40 years. I get up every day and I can't wait to practice. And it's like going home or meeting, or it's like connecting, right? Connecting, not just with myself, but with the thing around me. You know, and it's yes, my legs hurt, but it's a pure pleasure. It's a pure pleasure to be the Buddha. It's a pure pleasure to be the Buddha. And whether you're beginning or you've been doing this for 40 years, it's pure pleasure to be the Buddha. So please, if you're practicing to become the Buddha and you're beating yourself up, not good for you. But you should be practicing because this makes you feel better. And if it makes you feel better, keep doing it. Please keep doing it. And please never stop.